And the first speaker we have today is Sylvia Adlands. Sylvia is the Chief Executive Officer of the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal and will be addressing building human capacity in the regional communities. Thank you. Please welcome Sylvia.
Thank you, Di. Good morning. And it's a great pleasure to have come from Bendigo up here to participate in this forum, and I really applaud the organisers for including an agenda item such as this about human capacity and community capability. And the good thing is I feel like I'm coming home because I actually grew up near Yetham and went to primary school there and then high school at Inverell, and my mother still lives there, so it's sort of home territory for me. So thanks very much. I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, and I did ask for the lights to be turned on so I can actually see you, because I find it a very remote experience up here. And I have little scrappy notes, so I'm going to work my way through them, but I really feel I'm better at answering questions, so I want to leave time for some questions. The topic that I've been given is building human capacity in regional communities, but it actually needs a byline, because what I need to talk to you about is through philanthropy. So what I'd like to do is a straw poll, and I'd like you to stand up if you are a member of a community organisation, and that could be the PNC, could be a service club, sports club, Chamber of Commerce, CWA. So could you please stand up? Oh, look at those people sitting down. Okay. Oh, this is much better than I'd hoped for, but it truly does reflect rural Australia, I'd have to say. So sit down. Those of you who are standing, please sit down if you have the means to do what your group needs to do. Okay. Well, then some of you do. But you are the human capacity that an organisation such as FRRR is seeking to build. So sit down. Thank you very much. I do have one more question, though. I'd like a show of hands. Who has heard of or been supported by FRRR or the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal? Oh, it's taken 10 years. This is really good. Thank you. Thank you. And was it your first brush with philanthropy? Okay. Now, for my time this morning, and thank you for being reasonably bright and early, I'd like to cover the following. Some philanthropy facts, which I think are important to actually know about, a little bit about the foundation, and then the why about human capacity and some examples, which it's best to illustrate, I think. Philanthropy is largely a private sector, so it seems to be my single person mission to make this wonderful world known to as many people as possible. And so hopefully you're willing to listen about this. So what does the word mean? It actually simply means love of mankind. But there is a more modern definition, which is the giving of time, treasure, or talent. So I guess this makes all you people who are standing up in this room philanthropists, because it is about giving your time, as well as giving money, and as well as giving your skills. But importantly, it is actually about gifting with no expectation of anything in return. So that doesn't happen very often in this world, I'd have to say. So just remember that. And it makes it very different from sponsorship or marketing. So there's a very important distinction there in terms of philanthropic giving. It's also a world where soft and hard have to coexist, because the aim is to create a broader community benefit. However, this can only be done and achieved with very sound financial management, good judgment, and the best information possible for making decisions. Now, in Australia, the total sector assets are over $11 billion. So there's $11 billion of money washing around in the system because of philanthropy, because someone made a decision to give back to the community. And this is happening over a long period of time. The bulk of those funds still come from Victoria, and the reason that happened wasn't completely altruistic. People avoided death duties if they left their money for charitable purposes. So really, once death duties started to change those arrangements, then philanthropy was freed up and started to grow in other states. But where that tax income is foregone, then the benefit must remain in that actual state. So Victoria has a much stronger tradition, an older tradition of philanthropy than other states. But we'll catch up. And there are estimated to be at least 2,000 trusts and foundations. But no one really knows, because it's a private sector, it's not regulated and in a reporting sense, so it's interesting. And I should acknowledge a partner foundation that I believe is here today, the Royal Agricultural Society Foundation. Hi, Antonia. FRRR and RASF have been working together for the past 2 years for the benefit of New South Wales in the area of education. So there's a lot of emerging foundations. The tradition is really starting to grow. And I think the other important feature to understand about philanthropy is that it's perpetual. It's actually here forever. That money is going to be doing things in 100 and 200 years' time. And that's very different from most other funding sources. And the other thing is, the earnings from that $11 billion must be given away under different terms and conditions, depending on the trust, but the funds actually have to be given away. So it's an asset to a community that it's important to people to know about. So it really makes it very different from other forms of funding. Now, our foundation, FRRR, because it's got such a cumbersome name, because the government were involved in naming it. And I should acknowledge, I suppose, John Anderson was here yesterday, and it was really part of his vision, and particularly the vision of the Meyer family, that an entity like ours was actually set up. But we have three main strategies, and they're all underpinned by partnerships, so we never work alone. And what we do is work with others who actually care about rural and regional Australia, so we have to make the case and invite others to work with us, or they come to us because they're already in that space. So the three main strategies are grants programs, of which we've got around about 14, and we've given over $25 million in the past 9 years to more than 3,500 community organisations. So those people who stood up here in the company of many other community organisations all around rural and regional Australia, and even the offshore islands we fund. We also encourage the development of local level community philanthropy through the establishment of community foundations. And this is part of an international movement that's been going for almost a century and started in the US. But there are 30 such entities in Australia, and the majority of them are in rural and regional Australia. And then the third thing we do, which is important for communities in building their capacity, is we actually conduct what we call, they've got a really boring name, donation accounts. And this is where a community can raise tax-deductible funds through our foundation for their own projects. So it means that they don't have to set up their own infrastructure. They can work with a body like ours to help them. Now, what I'd like to do is give some examples to help you understand how this takes place on the ground. The grants. A good example, I think, is FRRR's had a partnership with ABC Rural and ABC Grandstand for the past 3 years, and we've conducted, they call competitions, and we give grants as prizes, and I think it's only the ABC who could actually cope with working in this way, so it works, it's mutually beneficial. We did Drought Not Out, and Culgurra Community near Brewarrina, hello, benefited that year from the major grant. And then we did Me Change last year, and this year we did Revive and Thrive. And is Fleur here? Oh, hello! We haven't met, we just talked on the phone. Yeah, okay, because Fleur, anyway, we're going to say. Okay, so this year, with grants of $10,000, communities in New South Wales, at Gloucester, for instance, they're diversifying their production in a food bowl project. In Balranald, they're holding a Five Rivers Festival in October, and you've got to look out for the My Camp Oven Rules competition, so I'd encourage you all to go to that. They're really excited about it. In Tasmania, in Zeehan, they're fixing up their community centre. In South Australia, in Mannum, they're turning a positive into a negative with a tourist trail along the river, taking in the wrecks that have been exposed by the low river levels, but now the river will be rising. But this is about the flexibility I think you need within communities to be able to make the most of what you've got. In Western Australia, at Beacon, which is a remarkable community of 300 people, they have a co-op that owns the local shop, and so they're putting in a cool room so they can make sure they can make fresh produce available to their community, and spending isn't bled off to other areas. In Victoria and Wallura, they're addressing water management issues for their community, and in Theodore, in Queensland, with $50,000, the local Chamber of Commerce is establishing several funds that will bring to life their no empty shopfront policy. So I just think there are remarkably diverse examples of what communities can come up with to do things, and our role is to enable communities to do it. So it's actually very hard to explain what we do because we don't do anything, because it's you guys who actually do everything. So if I give you an example of a community foundation, last week I was in Ceduna in South Australia, where the Eyre Peninsula Community Foundation was launching, and they have a clear plan and strong leadership. And so I think they're set for success. And they've also thought about what their local needs are, and they put in place a disaster fund because they have had recurring issues of bushfires in that area there. And what that means is this entity can raise funds tax deductibly and keep them within their own community. So instead of it going to a national emergency services organisation who, you know, might take 20% off the top and you end up with what's given back, or the state government running the program, the community are actually taking control and doing those sorts of things themselves. And they will do things like work with their local community banks. So it actually keeps the money local, and this is when parochialism is a good thing, in my view. And then the final example comes from an FRRR donation account, which is Smoky Bay near Ceduna, and again I visited it last week. And their jetty defines their community of 200 people, and it predates the little township, and it's in desperate need of repair. And no one would help. And one of the people said to me, she said, you know, if they were red, then whoever they talked to wanted pink, you know, they'd be green and they wanted blue. They just could not find a box to fit in. So the local Progress Association took up the cause, and they just wouldn't take no for an answer. And so they decided to raise the much needed funds themselves. And in doing so, they've got others on board. The jetty owner is actually a state government department, and so they've donated the timber, but they don't want anybody to know they've donated the timber because other people will ask for the timber, apparently. The local council will provide the labour, and the Progress Association essentially have the role of financier and project manager, and they've got all the design. So it's a really interesting partnership. I mean, none of it can be done on its own. Now, the jetty celebrates its centenary in 2012, so they've got a clear goal in terms of where they need to get to do that. Now, in closing, I'd just like to reflect on FRRR's experience. We've been going for 10 years now, and in fact we're conducting an evaluation into our effectiveness and impact, and thank you to the 1,500 people who completed the survey form. It closed the survey down, apparently. The consultants had to talk to America to get things reopened. So that was, you know, a really good exercise from us. But I think, in our experience, what builds human capacity is actually trust. And it's trust that communities know what they want. It's trust that they will deliver. And it's trust that they're best placed to do so. And we see this borne out again and again. And I don't care if anyone tells me I've got a Pollyanna view of the world. All I see is people doing good things to help themselves. So important features are you don't take no for an answer. You dig in, you be dogged, you go back, you find other ways. You have to find ways around things. I don't know that it's that advisable to go through. I think you've got to keep relationships intact. It's really important, but at the end of the day, you've all got to get on together and deliver on an outcome. The other thing that we see is that it's really important that a community intrinsically knows what's special about itself and capitalises on it. So not trying to be like the town next door, but just knowing what your point of difference is, and thinking deeply about that and planning about what really matters for your community. And you need to find friends and allies. We all need them. Our foundation certainly needs them. And the list, really, really goes on and on. And I should acknowledge the major partners that we have to our foundation that we've had really almost since day one, of the philanthropy of the Meyer family, the Sydney Meyer Fund and the Meyer Foundation. The Pratt Foundation has been a very active financial supporter. ANZ, I know Westpac is sponsoring this session, but ANZ is actually a bank that we have worked with and done the seeds of renewal program consistently over about the past seven years. Australia Post, Target, and lots and lots of other trusts and foundations and individuals. We'll get people ring up and make small donations to us, and we put that into our small grants program. But I think I might leave it there and say just the two things I forgot to say at the beginning. My CV is really short in there, but there's a couple of things that are missing that I would like to share with you. One is I'm also a graduate of the Australian Rural Leadership Program, and I think, again, about investing in human capacity. Those sorts of programs are actually starting to get some traction now. When I looked at the speakers list, there were quite a few of us who were graduates of the program, and there are probably more sitting in the audience. So it's important to participate in those sorts of activities to build yourself as an individual so you can contribute more broadly to your community. And the other thing that I was fortunate to do, and I would encourage people from rural and regional Australia to apply for, is I undertook a Churchill Fellowship in 2008. And that is the most marvellous thing. And it's for regular old Australians to go overseas and learn things they can't learn at home. And it's another example of philanthropy. And in fact, it was the largest amount of money ever raised until the tsunami came along that set up the Churchill Fellowship. So Australians have actually funded that for themselves. So please consider applying for those sorts of things, because they're there to invest in us. And now I will shut up.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. We obviously have time for a couple of questions. Are there any questions out there? We've got a mic.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about giving money out, not worrying about the outcome. If money, you sort of need to know if you're doing the right thing with that money.
Now, I didn't get all that question, sorry.
Shocking hearing.
It's not about not worrying about the outcomes, it's actually trusting that the outcomes take place. And we certainly need to know what each project achieves, and in reality we know not all of them will be successful. And for our foundation, because of our model where we form partnerships, it actually becomes our intellectual property. So what we do is we do ask and find out. So we do care, but it's not a gift, is actually just that. And so it's an important distinction to make, but it's how you then manage that process. So, for instance, every 2 years we put out a report that showcases a lot of the outcomes that are there. The evaluation that we're undertaking at the moment, 86% of the projects said that they successfully completed their project, in their view, and then there was about another 12% who said that they partially succeeded, and there were only 2% that didn't succeed. Now, I'd challenge a whole lot of government funding programs to come up with figures like that. And I really genuinely believe it's because you don't spend a lot of time interfering in what you're asking people to do. I mean, we don't have the capability. There's five of us in Bendigo running you know, a national foundation. But regardless of that, it's very much about a different style and a different type of relationship. So, yes, we care and we trust that it will happen, and we do ask whether it happens, so we need to know.
Another question? Jenny.
Thank you. I grew up in the part of the city state, a long way from the local town, and I'm not an American man down here. I was really impressed about the local community and their fundraising abilities, and the hospital, the hospital wards, and then the hospital stories. And the amount of money that was raised locally and lifting the bills was incredible. That power was taken away in some community regions, and people stopped doing what they were doing. I'm just wondering if we're getting up on that level, and I'm just talking about sort of like hospitals and things. If the change is coming, whether that ability, and if the other people also put on top, because we have a bit more money. And obviously those people are putting on something else, but I'm just wondering if that sort of bring back to the community and the initial needs to get that community and community together.
This is where I would suggest a strategy of having a local community foundation actually works, because what you have is an independent philanthropic vehicle that can benefit a broad range of charitable causes within your community. So, for instance, if a bequest is left to a community foundation, it can be with wishes of the person who's left it, and it could be to the local hospital, you know, or it could be to the local special school, or it could be for environmental projects. But it means you have one organisation working across the whole range of community interests, and it is really important within your community to have a good relationship with your local solicitors, so you actually tap into those funds that have often been left and are being distributed for charitable purposes, and make yourself known if you do have a cause that could benefit from that sort of thing. So I think sometimes you've got to find new mechanisms, because if the trust is broken because the relationship changes, for instance, in the healthcare sector, then, you know, you need to think of other ways of working that will help capture the wealth for the community.
One more question.
I'm just wondering about
The way our foundation is structured, and they're all different beasts, you know, that's what's fascinating about philanthropy. Every time you meet foundations, like meeting another person, and all their idiosyncrasies and foibles come through it. Our foundation is an independent organisation. It's a company limited by guarantee. Board of Directors, Anne Sinclair's our chairman, and has been since day one. Bill Kelty's on our board, Wendy Craig's on our board, Tim Fairfax is on our board. They volunteer their time and run the organisation. We were, I can't work out what the right word is, we were entrusted, I think is the word, with $10 million from the Australian government. So we do have what's called an endowment. So we do have funds under management, and we yield income from that. However, that is not sufficient to do all the things we need to do. And we were set up with a mission to work in partnerships with business, with governments, and with philanthropy. And so what we've had to learn to do and mature as an organisation is work out, and particularly when you're working with corporations, they don't want to give you money that you'll whack in the bank and still be doing great things in 100 years' time. They want to see results here and now. So we are what I call a get and give foundation. So we receive funds, and typically we would give them out within the same year. So there's various models of philanthropy, but traditional philanthropy is generally endowed philanthropy, where money has been left and invested, and the interest is used for charitable purposes. So we're sort of a bit of both, and over time we will grow our corpus, but our main strategy is actually demonstrating the value of having such an organisation at the moment. And we do have unique grant-making capabilities in the way that we were originally set up, so we're very, very fortunate. Anyone happy to talk to people? I'll be here for the rest of the day if people have got any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sylvia.